Do you keep looping the same stories over and over again, experiencing the same patterns, whether it's, you know, around money and building wealth or relationships, finding love, or even just like dealing with your own shadow and what to do with it? Well, today's guest is here to tell you that none of it's real anyway, maybe, and that the hero's journey is a little bit overrated. Can't wait for you to listen.
There is magic happening, Softpreneur, because you're here with us and we're WellNet. We're Elisa Joachim and Dawn Petrin, and we help the wellness industry's most disruptive thought leaders express their essence louder and prouder to create more profitability and possibility. And today, it's your turn. Wow. We had the most alchemical conversation with Rai Schwartz / Hendrix Black / The Money Shaman, and we are so excited to share it with you. Rai is the father of conversion copywriting. Well, not conversion copywriting, but a school that we follow called Coaching the Conversion, which has really influenced our work and the work of the world's greatest copywriters, especially in the coaching industry. He also is just such a multifaceted creator, sharing in the space of relationship and money. He's recently authored, I believe, 3 books, and we go really deep on everything from his writing process and how he channels creativity to how he approaches copy and getting into the heads of his ideal customer, to is this all real anyway, as Dawn suggested, to a really aligned approach to shadow work. So if you're delving into that or curious about it, he's such a rich resource to write relationship in business and relationship in life. And we just can't wait for you to dive in. This one was really deep and we loved every minute of it.
Welcome back, Softpreneurs. Elisa and I are ridiculously so freaking excited because we have the Rai Schwartz here today. And in some circles, Rai is like almost as famous as you can get. And then in other circles, you may have never heard of him. But if you've bought something online in the last 5 to 10 years, chances are, especially in the coaching and healing space, chances are if you got excited about the copy that you were reading, Rai either wrote it or taught the people who wrote it how to write like that. So father of the coaching, the conversion method that we speak about a lot, as well as, I want to say, like, multi-hyphenate artist and yogi and father and all around. Yeah, not to put you on a pedestal, Rai, but like, just, we look up to you so much and speak about you with so much reverence all the time. So it's so exciting to have you here today.
Thank you. I'm going to have to bring in some self-deprecating vibes to like balance it out right now. But yeah, cue my negative self-talk. Bring it in. No, I'm joking. So good to be here.
We can talk about that in the pod today for sure. Yeah. Before we get started, I will say that Rai is the only person I know who 3 months after releasing a book might message me and be like, hey, I low-key wrote another one that's about to be launched. And I've just been like in awe of your creativity, especially in the last as well. Yeah. And I'll get started. So we always ask this same question to everyone when they first get here on the pod. And it is, do you have a spiritual practice? And if so, is there anything you want to share about it?
Cliche, everything is a spiritual practice, which is very much true. Yeah. I mean, I think like obviously as parenthood became very parenty, right? Formal practices and rituals and ceremonies became a little bit different. Right. And those took on different shapes. But ultimately, yeah, what is my spiritual practice? I feel contacted by this pulse of what I would call, you know, the cosmic mother, the cosmic father. And it's just rippling and expressing in all these myriad of sometimes weird, sometimes strange, sometimes very still and silent ways. And there's been this practice of essentially responding and dancing and moving with that current. So I would say that my spiritual practice tends to be, I'd say, even more feminine in nature. I feel moved by those currents quite frequently. It doesn't get expressed in these big emotions. There's really containment in that. And the big emotionality seems to disperse within this wide open space, but then it takes form within all these different energetic signatures and projects and relationships that I'm blessed to have in my life. So cliche answered, followed by a little bit more of a deeper dive.
No, I love it. It's perfect. And actually, Bri was on Shanti and I's podcast back in 2021 and really dove into his spiritual awakening. So if you want to hear about like a really sort of exciting and kind of crazy experience, crazy is, I don't know, an unfair way of saying it, but really like, you want to hear about someone really like being in touch with spirit in the physical form, totally recommend going and checking that out. And we won't go too deep into it here because we went deep, deep, deep into it. Yeah, like, oh my gosh, I guess 3 years ago.
That's deep in the archives. Yeah, right?
Yeah, so that's Automated Intimacy, Entrepreneur's Ecosystem with Rye Schwartz. We will link to it so you can listen to it and go even further. But thank you for sharing that. And it's interesting because like, although you're saying it's cliche and it does seem to be the answer that most people give us when we ask that question, it does feel like that comes with a level of like, not hierarchical, but spiritual maturity where you've done a whole bunch of practices that are like outside of life and then life becomes this whole practice.
Right. Yeah. Beautiful. Cool.
Yeah. We have so many things we could start to talk about. So I'm going to let Elisa lead the way for us today, please. And thank you.
Okay. Well, I have a lot of things that I want to talk to Rye, aka Hendrix Black, aka a few other monikers, most likely.
Yeah.
Money shaman.
About. And actually, kind of to start, something that Don and I like to connect a lot about is, because we hold space for a lot of businesses that are personal brands, is authenticity as a business owner or following your own unique path. And it feels like you've taken some, from the outside, I could see that you've taken some swerves in the direction of your creative pulls and putting yourself out there in new ways in the last couple of years. And I'd love to just hear you speak about that a little bit and what it has felt like. Does it feel like you've tuned your business more to your true self? If authentic is another kind of cliche or overused word, I kind of like it, but you know, everyone has different feelings about it. And yeah, I'd love to hear about that.
Such a good question. And I've wrestled with it, right? Like I have an amazing partner, right, who sees all these things I'm creating and expressing. And, you know, she does the soothing sometimes and says like, is this your authentic voice or is this a role? Is this a persona, right? And like it raises, like I came from the screenwriting world. I know how to create character, right? I love creating character. I love creating vehicles for these archetypes to express through that otherwise wouldn't find voice. And maybe I wear that energetic clothing for a day. Maybe I wear it for a year. Maybe I only wear it when someone's relating to me as that and I could respond as such, right? I think my natural disposition is one where I can easily shapeshift and reconfigure around the moment and how I'm being related to. And that has its upsides and its downsides. But when we talk about authenticity, I guess my question has always been like, relative to what? Relative to an idealized self-image, idealized to a glorified trauma response that I call it my personality, like relative to what? And at this stage of life, career, business, I don't know what's authentic or not. I respond to a current, I respond to a flow, I make myself available to it. And there's been a certain, I guess surrender might be the right word, a surrender to this annihilating and liberating force that you can call, you know, the cosmic Shakti that will just destroy the fuck out of all these pedestals I put myself on and all these existential hooks I've clung to. And there's a certain bliss in being responsive to that. So I don't walk around, you know, in spiritual clothing and call myself the money shaman and give energetic healing on the street corner. No, I don't, you know, walk around, you know, waving the Hendrix Black flag, right? And saying, this is me. And in those moments when I tune in to, I guess you could call it the morphic fields of what Hendrix Black is or of what the money shaman is, there's just this whole body and wealth of information that's always there and that I enjoy dipping into that pond and seeing what is useful and seeing what might be helpful to express and what might even be joyful in my body to express. So yeah, that's kind of how things have moved and shifted and been shaped, especially over the last year, where I feel there's been more and more surrender and less fear of trying to maintain a certain so-called image.
I love this. And with your screenwriting background and that ease of kind of slipping into characters and voices, does having a different name for these different sort of channels help you kind of put on that persona? What does it look like when you're in the writing process with those?
Say it's just an organic part of the process. And this was experienced without the conscious awareness of it in my screenwriting days throughout my 20s, right? When I would create a character and that character just housed this information about that character, right? And when I was writing, I would embody that and there'd be a transference of energy between me and this character. How that has kind of evolved in a more conscious and slightly more intentional way is, you know, I view Hendrix Buck, I view The Money Shaman, I even view Farah Schwartz, the copywriter, as these energetic signatures, right? Like, and when I tune into all three of them from my quote unquote pure awareness, they all have different feels. They all have different textures. They all have different associations, right? And they all have different information based on how, you know, the audiences of all three have related to them, right? That becomes part of what those characters or fields become. Now, a strange thing happens when I write, you know, when I'm writing as Raj Schwartz or when I'm writing as Hendrix Black or writing as the Money Shaman, there seems to be this natural capacity to tap into, you know, that signature and the knowledge bodies attached to it and what information is available to them. And there's a very natural process. And same thing happens when I'm coaching as those people, right? I don't do a ton of study. I don't read a lot. I don't immerse myself in all this information. I have, like, I don't know, 200 books back there and I haven't touched one of them like in 10 years. And that's not just because of like the joys of parenting and getting interrupted every 2 minutes. But there seems to be this connection point between tuning into an energetic signature, finding the body of information that has access to, and just allowing that to flow through verbally, within conversation, within coaching, within relationship, and within writing.
I feel like, okay, I love this. And I think that so many of us are denying ourselves the bodies of information that we actually probably have access to by thinking that information needs to come from elsewhere. And I would love to give our listeners a little bit more context for these different, I'm gonna call them characters, but these different channels. So who is Hendrix Black? And what does he write/muse upon?
Interesting. Hendrix Black first emerged as, you know, an aspect of myself, like probably 15 years ago. 15 years ago in my screenwriting days, actually, right? Like, I penned a few of my scripts, the more personal, bold, daring, adventurous ones that I would never want anyone to associate with Ryan Schwartz under that name. That's where it got kind of invented from. Then I let that go, right? And like that name reemerged, I guess, in a really big way in 2020-ish, 2021. That's when I was finishing my first book. It was The Seven Initiatory Fires of Modern Manhood. It's a book I started writing to self-initiate myself through fatherhood in particular and relationship, as all that, you know, juicy, weird, strange, agonizing stuff just kind of exploded to the surface. And yeah, stuff had to be faced. And the real in-person, in the flesh, mentor or elder wasn't there. There were, I'd say, inadequate stand-ins. And, you know, yeah, there was a lack of that elder or mature, you know, wise one to really kind of guide me through that. And there was pain in that, as there sometimes is, right? There was pain in what I judged to be the inadequacy of that. And then I started really kind of tapping in. Well, what is this information I'm seeking, right? What is this graduation of consciousness from here to here that I'm seeking? And why wouldn't that be available, right? Like, that gets expressed through certain beings and that energy is highly impersonal. So I wrote that book as a self-initiation process, you know, the seven fires being relationship, business, thriving physically and mentally in this weird, strange world, so forth, so forth. And what's strange about that book is those who read it, like, they read it and they're like, this feels very definite, certain, and authoritative, right? And then they meet me or we have a conversation where I'm not embodying any of these archetypes, right? And I'm a lot more open and uncertain in many ways, right? I'm not solidifying myself around a few speaking points and a few temporary truths. And I think what that was evidence of for me was, okay, like this was a pool of information. These aren't my natural thoughts. These aren't my natural conclusions that I've drawn. They were what has been tremendously useful to initiate myself into these realms, right? And maybe they'd be useful for others. So I wrote that book and then I was tuning into like, well, whose book is this, right? It's not Ryan Schwartz, right? And then this energetic construct of Hendrix Black just kept like knocking at the door, right? Knocking at the door, knocking at the door. And I felt weird. I felt really weird about publishing under that name at first. I'm like, am I hiding? Am I trying to maintain this sense of safety, right? Are there parts of me that are afraid of being judged and attacked and ridiculed and this and that? And I looked through all those corners and chasms and some of them were real for a moment. And then those got cleared. And then still I'm like, this isn't Ryan Schwartz, right? And this Hendrix Black character just like literally placed itself on like the cover, right? And it was like undeniable. And that's where I kind of reignited this relationship with this pool of consciousness, right? And what else, right? And then I remember when I wrote that book, the relationship chapter in particular was the one that like really felt alive. Like there was so much more to be said there. There was so much more for myself to self-initiate myself into, right? And this Hendrix Black character is like, deeper, like deeper, go deeper, go deeper, go deeper, go deeper. And I could say go deeper like 1,000 times because I still need to go deeper. I still get to go deeper, right? There's just the scraping of the surface there. So yeah, these pools of consciousness, these aspects of self, whatever we want to call them, they come alive and they make themselves known. And some of them, sometimes they're patient. Sometimes they're like, this is a right now thing. Sometimes there's a grace and a patience there. The Money Shaman one was far more random, you know, far more random. That was like a few years ago now, like going for a run in the gym, right? Essentially, like just running laps. And then like, it was literally like, I felt this like knocking on my door once again. That's just the best way I can like say it or articulate it. And it was like, you're the Money Shaman. You're going to write this book. And I'm like, no, 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 that's not me. Like give it to that person there. Like, you know, I don't look great in ponchos, you know, no. and then like that information just started like coming into my auric field, right? Like it's like, all right, you don't need to call yourself that, but we're still going to flood your aura with this information, right? With this awareness, with this touch point with the consciousness of money. And you're going to have that conversation because you're available for it. So I started having it and I said, all right, you know, the coffee shop's there. I'll go sit down. Right. And if you got something to say, say it, right. I'll give you like one writing session. That's it. Right. And, yeah, it just started working, right. Like it just started flowing. At that point, I was already running men's groups and doing some coaching in that space. And I had found myself, retrospectively, I realized that I had found myself doing a lot of work around money, around abundance, around prosperity wounds, around providership wounds, all those aspects that ended up being key components of shadow money, right? So I guess that was me availing myself to that work or that work already moving through me, and then it gave itself more definition. So yeah, there's process to all of it. But yeah, I guess in the grand orchestration, it all makes sense, sort of.
I'm always blown away by certain wild synchronicities in your background and mine. I'm not co-opting this in any way, but I also have a screenwriting background. And when I started copywriting, there was like this and this and this, and there were like all these strange things. And this initiatory journey, I love you using that word. And I'm thinking about, I've long wanted to ask you about the sort of connection with screenwriting and copywriting, because I do feel that there's like an underlying certain things that make a good screenwriter also make a good copywriter. But weaving this sort of through, like the hero's journey is also a piece of this, or taking initiatory journeys as we either hold space for somebody's coaching transformation or coach the conversion through a launch or a copy process. And it sounds as though your writing process has a bit of this, like a relationship to muse, or a relationship, I mean, to something really being channeled through you as you're available to it. So I'm not so sure what my question is here so much as just kind of like tracking the breadcrumbs. And here it is. I think that business is such an initiatory journey, or just stepping forward in entrepreneurship in this strange and wild time that we are all in. And what are your thoughts on the initiation of business this day and age?
Big question. First, I want to morph back into 2020. I remember I was like on the third floor of the Waldorf school, like in this little town that we just moved to. And I remember like coming across your Facebook profile somewhere and like noticing like Kriya Yoga. Oh my God. Waldorf. Oh my God. Like, and just like, we got to be friends. So yeah, like I just totally remember that, like, just like that weirdness. I'm like, are we the same person? Just like expressed through different bodies. Yeah.
It was like down to like, we both had a connection to, yeah, to UCLA and to screenwriting and to copy and to like, it's just like, and we were both talking about Waldorf at the same time. It was like, whoa. And for on my side, it was the beginning of my copywriting career. And I just pivoted from screenwriting because I graduated from a master's in UCLA in screenwriting in March of 2020, and everything, exploded. And I sort of was like, oh, copywriting. Okay. And so you were like the original probably expander for me of like, you know, what could be possible in that space. And then also like bringing in the spiritual dimensions of it, and the really what the coaching realm offers to us now, which like the whole coaching industry. So it's just kind of like mind blowing. And maybe we don't like talk about the coaching industry that much. Well, maybe we do, but like just the spiritual, the personal growth and coaching relationship. And now I'm rambling, but I'm just kind of like, because I just like constantly get like blown away by strange synchronicities, including the last one I'll share is that in the last year, Dawn and I held space for a book project, The Reclaimed Woman. Like we doula'd and midwifed Kelly Brogan through that book. And it's a story of a woman's like initiatory journey, kind of like a parallel in some ways, perhaps, to the seven initiatory buyers. And I found myself, I don't know if you found this too, Dawn, like literally taking a reclaimed woman's journey all through this year and really feeling this like meta, like what I'm working on is working on me all year, bringing us into shadow work, which I know you have written and talked a whole bunch about in the last year.
Yeah. So this is going to relate to your first question that I totally bypassed, but yeah. Weaving both of them together. And I have the reclaimed moment like 2 feet away from me right now. And it's amazing. And I love the writing. And it just like, it wakes me up every time I just even contact the energetic signature of it, which is y'all. So yes, thank you. Business being initiatory, right? So in my first book, Seven Initiatory Fires, I talk about that, right? Like livelihood, certainly initiatory, right? Business, certainly initiatory. And I think that there are truth elements to that. Like, where I feel that resonates on, you know, a truthfulness versus falsehood scale right now is probably somewhere around like a 7.5, 8.5 on 10. And about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago now, I was at this like business event, right? Of like, yeah. And like, it was the first event I had gone to in like years. I'm not an event person. And it was one of those events where everyone's giving their signature talk, their signature story, right? With all the right beats and all the right arcs. And it's so polished. And like, they're all getting the ovations. And like, I just, my system just was like, fuck no, right? Like, it just had no more tolerance for this I guess, like what felt inorganic, right? The hero's journey started feeling inorganic. It started feeling to some degree as like the wheel of samsara itself, right? This over implication of self into this grand importance of the hero or the heroine. It felt actually more entrapping than it did as a, call it a liberating or a sense-making vehicle. And that was weird for me, right? Coming from the screenwriting world, right? Like I lived and breathed myth. I lived and breathed archetype. I lived and breathed the hero's journey. So this is like blasphemous to my system to say like, nah, I think I'm done with this hero's journey. I think I'm done with mythologizing. Mythologizing? That's not even a word. Someone correct me here.
Mythologizing.
Mythologizing. You nailed it. Myth making was going to be my backup in case I can get to that word, right? But like the idea of myth making itself feels quite egocentric and strengthening of the importance around certain events of one's life. And that's why like I don't talk about these big markers in my life anymore, right? The quote unquote stroke story, the quote unquote rise from nothing story, the like broke, like story itself has really started to feel at this point inorganic and artificial. And like we're taking, to use like a film metaphor, right? Like a movie, right, is essentially the final polished cut of all this footage that was taken, right? Dozens of hours, if not hundreds of hours, which in of itself was one portion of all the potentialities, of all the angles, all the potential story iterations that could have been. And what you see as that final quote-unquote story is just essentially an arbitrary placement of character within certain beats. And it felt to some degree that when we give our power to story, we get trapped within that storyline. Like storyline felt really entrapping and still does. So yeah, there's a story aversion, which is really weird to say out loud and still feels a little blasphemous. There's an appreciation for it, for what it's been. And there's a very clear doneness, right? Of like, I don't know if story is what we thought it was. Like story feels like living architecture that can pull you in and for many, very difficult to get out, even if it's a quote unquote empowering story. Right. So that's that. Right. And then as far as like business and initiation, I'd say like the term that has felt most relevant and most appropriate for now, and maybe we have this conversation in 2 years from now and there's a more appropriate one. But in my books, I talk about this concept of edge work, right? Which is what I would call a more complete and holistic form of shadow work. So shadow work in of itself, I mean, you can do a deep dive right into the gunkiest gunk, into all those hidden chasms, and it could be really painful and agonizing, and you could do that forever, right? I feel like these quote-unquote initiatory realms is where you get to perform the edge work, where it is uncomfortable, right? Where it evokes the parts of you that are still a fuck no to it, right? The parts of you that are terrified of what may be revealed, and the parts of you that are all but certain that you're going to fail and flail and flatline and just not make it to the other end, right? So edge work is a really interesting process, which to me, business is, right? When it calls upon you to constantly, right, confront, and not necessarily constantly, depending on how much you allow yourself to be immersed, but constantly find yourself in these new realms that draw forth these quote unquote shadows, these wounded parts, these fearful parts, these traumatized parts do a really great job hiding and cloaking in the darkness unless there's a reason for them to come out, right? And to scream, right? And business is a great way to do that. Relationship is a great way to do that. Mothering and fathering and providing and, you know, dancing in public and singing on the stage and leading a yoga class. These are all like very good ways of drawing out those characters or those unresolved parts. So yeah, business has shadow work or business as a form of initiation, shadow work, edge work, absolutely, like ongoing, still experiencing it.
Yeah, I have many thoughts, and I would love to bring you back to story for a moment. Do you think that the use of story in selling is part of what brought you to this place? Because you said I was at a conference and they were hitting the beat, and they were telling their story over and over again, as opposed to, you know, the pre-written era, the pre-literate era where we, you know, told story to pass on information. Do you think that where that came from, or what do you think?
Possibly, right? Like, I think story as a vehicle for passing along information, when that was really one of the most effective, if not the only mechanism for doing it, that makes a lot of sense, right? Like, that feels strong in my system. Story as a tactic, story as a sense-making crutch that one derives meaning from their suffering forever, less so, right? I think it certainly has had its purpose. And there is an enjoyment, right, in hearing story. I think where story becomes potentially a dangerous game, right, is when you over glorify or over identify with the story of Ryan or the story of Don or the story of when this happened or the story of failure to triumph or the story. Like, I think that's where it becomes, yeah, more entrapping.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. I think that's, that's super interesting. I'm going to have to like mull for a bit before I really know how I feel, except that I do have this aversion to like my origin story in business and telling it on Instagram in order to have clients understand who I am. Do you know what I mean? We teach in email marketing, you should use. So as the father of coaching the conversion, before we get into this initiatory experience of business, I wonder if there's anything you want to say about that. And also, Elisa and I had been chatting like, oh, Ryan's emails seem a little bit different. And I don't know if this has to do with the story thing. And also, maybe we're way too nerdy when we're reading your emails. So anyway, yeah, you have anything to say in relation to story and coaching the conversion?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'd say like at times, right? Like, I think it is still a sweet indulgence and an enjoyable experience, right, on the other side. I'm not in this paradigm of never tell a story again, right? And never enjoy a story again. So just to be clear, right? Like, I think my system responds primarily to not getting entrapped within one's story, right? And sometimes, obviously, when we repeat the same story over and over and over and over again, and, you know, we could point to some coaches and online creators who have been saying the same freaking story for over 10 years, that starts feeling a little bit less comfortable in my system. But I feel like story in emails, right? Story in Instagram captions, right? Story, like, they certainly have their place, right? Like, they let one into your POV. Obviously, there's resonance, there's relatability there, and all these are really important factors in human connection, right? And marketing is still very much human connection. Selling is very much human connection. And when we're talking about like dropping story and transcending this ego realm, right? Like, that's a whole different game, right? So like, let's just acknowledge the game we're playing, right? And not get too hung up on, you know, yeah, I guess like mixing the planes of the two. So yeah, I think that's my short version of saying, yay, the story, right? Like, when it comes to like marketing and coaching the conversion and giving your audience opportunities to find resonance, right? And find connection, 100%, like one of the more effective and I'd say like still enjoyable things to indulge in.
Yeah, we talk about like marketing as a healing modality. And I feel like when I'm coaching anyway, a lot of the time I can feel those stories that people are saying and that are like holding them back from selling, right? Like, we have some amazing clients in our coaching program. And one of them is like, oh, I'm very permeable. So I have trouble setting boundaries. So I don't know if I should be selling these kind of packages. I'm like, meh, sounds like a story. And you know, you were saying like, oh, and they're empowering stories too. And so I maybe we don't want to hold fast to those either. And I'm like, let's replace this permeable story with like, I'm really great at holding boundaries, right?
Yeah. Stories, when I tune into the energetics of them, like, they are these living things, right? In, you know, ceremonial magic, that might be called an egregore, right? Or in, you know, other circles, a morphic field, or I think, you know, there's different terms for it. Right. But I think when stories get empowered with energy and they have intent, right, and you're a certain character within them, I literally experience them in my body as like a cord that won't let you go. Right. It's kind of feeding off of you and it intends to have you play out that story for perpetuity, because that story doesn't know who or what it is beyond that. Right. its survival depends on your energy aligning with it.
Yeah. Okay. So this brings me into like shadow money and like this like entity of money that you speak of. I don't know if I'm like really into entities right now. I've been listening to the Emerald podcast and he's got a really great one on entities. So I'm like, oh God, I never thought of it that way. But yeah, can we talk a little bit about the story that people tell themselves around money? Because I do think that, I do think it relates to what we're speaking about already. And that part of the book really, like, really resonated with me.
Yeah, I guess like what it really boils down to, right? Like if we treated and even took the leap of assumption, right, that money is conscious or has some degree of consciousness, whether we're talking about like money with a capital M, right? Or a smaller microcosm of that, your money, quote unquote, yours, or your future pools of money, right? Every one of those, right? If I said, you know, relate right now with the current money in your account, you would get some information if you're a little bit intuitive, right? Or a lot of information if you're very open. If I asked you to relate to your future pools of money or your next $100,000, your next $1 million, or your next $10 million, right? You would get different pools of information, right? And if you're getting different pools of information from different signals of it, I don't know, what does that tell you? And then if you have certain feelings to those different pools, right? How would that affect how that money responds to you? If it comes closer, if it distances, if it can arrive and be received, or if it's scared, or if it's actually afraid of coming into your presence, right? So yeah, shadow money touches upon some of the bigger themes, but really the work of this is really tuning into your specific pools, right? Tuning into your specific current pools, right? Like you can relate to the money in your bank account right now and get some information. And a simple question, right, would like, how would you feel more cared for right now? How would you feel more stewarded? And I had a post, like I don't post too much on that Instagram account, but for whatever reason, it's the one that like seems to grow organically. I'm like, why are you following me? I'm not doing anything. Why's anyone following me? But one message there was like, money needs masculine containment, right? Like, and that came from me tuning in to my savings account, right? And that money is like, what am I doing here? Right? Like, this ain't my home, right? Like, allow me to circulate, allow me to be expressed and give me direction, right? And it was seeking direction. So yeah, the work of shadow money really at its core is letting go of a lot of those bigger blocks that would prevent one from even desiring to relate to money, right? If one sees money as this oppressive force, if one has been programmed and imprinted to see money as a perpetrator, right? Perpetrators will continue to perpetrate, right? Like that ain't going to stop. If you see yourself as a victim to money, you're going to avoid it, right? And it's going to avoid you. So yeah, in that book, essentially, I took the meta themes that were emerging in my private coaching work around that. And my goal was like, and I'm not going to do one-on-one sessions with 10,000 people, right? Or hundreds of thousands of people. What would be these meta themes I can bring to the surface into corresponding course, Shadow Money Medicine, the ceremonies that could really help one self-initiate and self-liberate from these entanglements that clearly don't serve and haven't served. And it's been really, really cool to see the response to that one over the last year. So, yeah.
Is there a relationship then to kind of to shadow work and ego eradication?
Whew, that's a really good question. And I'm probably going to be speaking more authoritatively than I actually am on this topic, right? Because I don't know which character I'm tuning into right now who feels like he really knows. Here is my current level of understanding around that, right? Like, I don't relate to ego as a single entity, but more of a conglomeration of, you know, dozens, hundreds, thousands of parts, aspects, identities that are in turn tuned into and attached to corresponding identities within the collective, right? And have resonance with that. That's why information keeps feeding into them. So ego eradication and shadow work in that paradigm or in that viewpoint of sense making and understanding would align, right? For me, shadow work doesn't, shadow work isn't complete until that aspect or that part that is hooked into other parts and a greater field, right, gets resolved back into quote unquote unity, consciousness or wholeness or source or God, right? And to me, this is where there's been perceived limitations and judged limitations to things like parts work and internal family systems, where I've understood those to be, not saying this is what it is, but what I've understood it to be, more about creating peace treaties, temporary peace treaties between parts that, you know, all have a certain narcissistic view of them being the real one and everyone else being along for the ride and being uncooperative. And that's not a knock on these parts. These parts, to me, are fragmented pieces of consciousness that lack the awareness, lack the wisdom, and forget who and what they were and are before being fragmented. So for me, shadow work or shadow integration is both healing their perceived woundings, right? Like giving them that space, giving them that grace, right? Like, I see that this happened. I see that within your understanding and your makeup, this happened and it was shitty, right? And wounding and traumatizing. And that's one really big part of it that I focus on in both Shadow Money as well as more recently, the Relationship Recode under the Hendrix Black work, is giving grace, like having these parts express within this field of fierce grace. And then when they are complete and in hearing, feeling heard and seen, reminding them of who they are, right? So reminding them of who they were before and beyond that experience, right? Giving them a chance to reintegrate, reminding them that they're welcome back. In my experience, a lot of these parts feel ashamed for their quote unquote original sin, right? Of misunderstanding and of forgetting who they are. And they don't feel like they could be welcomed back without shame, right? So a big part of my shadow work process that has found its way, I guess that's a common thread between Shadow Money and my work as Hendrix Black, is it's a very similar process, is reintegrating these parts back into wholeness through that loving presence that we so wonderfully started this session with. Like, it's the same energy, right? When I was feeling that opening prayer, when things arise within that field, they can be resolved back into that ultimate undifferentiated unity. So yeah.
I feel like you just helped me to integrate an understanding. And also, we recorded a podcast we're never going to release about shadow. And I was like, oh, if we had done this one with Rye first, we probably would. So maybe we'll re-record the shadow one with this in mind. But I recently did a yoga weekend with a woman who is in the like Shivananda Saraswati lineage. And she was like, we are addicted to shadow work and there's no such thing as shadow, because when you turn the light on shadow, it's gone. And it feels like this, and I was like, yeah, that's true, but how is the light shone upon it? And what is the light that shines upon it? And how, and sure, like internal family systems or just, you know, less accredited, not accredited in like a accredited is better than unaccredited, but like doing shadow work, say the way that, you know, me and Elisa might be doing it, as opposed to like with someone who's certified IFS. It's like the addiction to the shadow doesn't go away in the same way as if you turn the light on it. And I understood intuitively what she meant, but you put it into words, like bringing it back into unity consciousness, bringing it back to God. When God looks at shadow, there is no shadow. It just is, you know? And so, yeah. And so thank you so much for that. I'm like, oh, okay, good. I can move forward, because we were blocked. We got rambly on that podcast. We were like, okay, well, we're just making art. We don't have to share every art we make. And I feel like, you know, for the people who are listening to this podcast, a lot of them are probably like wellness entrepreneurs or coaches, like big-hearted AF human beings who have discomfort with wanting large pools of money. You know, and like that there's like shadow there. And in the Money Shadow book, like, and also other sort of like money teachers speak about, you know, people doing good things with this entity. of money. So I think what I'm trying to say here is that the shadow around money that so many of us experience in as healers who also need to eat, perhaps can begin to be resolved through this, like, giving grace to the shadow that you're feeling around it. I'm not sure how to do that. Maybe it's in the book, or maybe I need to coach with Rye. Probably both. But yeah, do you have anything? Yeah, anything to say about this? Like, how do you shine the light on the shadow so that it isn't there?
Yeah. So once again, like, edgework is really kind of that squirmy, interesting space, right? So I guess very practically speaking, I would create an important distinction, right? Of like, who is the one doing shadow work, right? Is it the one who just wants to be done with this shit at all costs as fast as possible, right? Because that part doesn't have any capacity to initiate healing. Or is it the part that is enamored by the idea of shadow work as a cool thing to do, right? Because that part also lacks certain capacities. And I guess one big distinction or one big litmus test, right, is like, you know, the path of, is this a path of courage or is this a path of grace, right? And where there's courage, there's fear. And if the one who is approaching shadow has fear, chances are that part that is leading the charge doesn't have the resource or the capacity to do it, right? So this is where facilitation helps, right? Like, really, to me, the process is as simple as tuning in to that space that doesn't have a name, yet I call it fierce grace because that's what it feels like to me. The part of you, or not the part of you, right? The field that you are already completely transparent to and can hide from if you wanted to, right? The part or that field that you are already beloved by as you are, right? And upheld by as you are, and resourced and nourished as you are, relaxing into that field, right? And then sometimes simply asking a question, right? Or creating a statement, right? Like, I feel tremendous joy in allowing $50,000 to come to me right now, right? And allowing the parts that are in harsh resistance to show up and make their case and witness them. And in its most basic form, there's nothing to do. There's no verbalizations needed. There's no, you know, forcing engagement with these parts, right? There's allowing these parts to arise within this field of fierce grace, which is alchemical, right? Which has a contact with these parts, and this field is where they manifested from, and there's a thread back to that home, right? So that's one way to do it with a facilitator, right? I'd say, like, speaking as that field, right? And just witnessing, right? I see you feel this way. Like, I see that this happened, right? And allowing them to be fully witnessed back into completion would be another way to do it. Gosh, what was the initial question? I went on a tangent.
I have a follow-up or just a gratitude for this, because as I've been dabbling in some shadow work in the last year, I've kind of stepped away for a minute because I found there were times where I did a little shadow exercise and then 2 days later, like, something really chaotic happened in my external circumstances. And I almost don't even want to talk about it. So I'm probably walking the line between the courage and fear with it. So being a mom with a young child, I'm like, I don't know if I want to subject my family to what has happened when I touch the shadow work. I've got a lot of Scorpio. So I'm like, oh yeah, I go right in there. But like, I've felt like I wanted to even let listeners know, like, for me, I feel like maybe I've touched it in ways, or maybe it does. So I'm curious, does doing shadow work sometimes create these, like, I find sometimes really obvious, like, reflections immediately after in my outside world? And how do you integrate that or do this, approach this with keeping your nervous system feeling safe?
That's a good question. And I've experienced some degree of that. But mostly, right, I would say I've experienced, you know, a lot of grace, right, in these processes. This relates with, I guess this has some connective tissue to, I think it's a chapter on, like, reality distortion fields within the Shadow Money book, right? Where it's like, we have an idea that healing must happen within a context of chaos fields, right? And dramatic breakdown and upheaval and dark nights and, you know, feeling feral and wanting to burn shit to the ground, right? And all of the above. And that could be true. And it has felt true at times. And, right, like that's kind of a superimposed construct that we are assigning, quote unquote, the work to be expressed through, right? That is like one template in this reality creation grid, if you want to call it that. And I choose, right? Like, you know, can this happen through grace, right? Can this happen through being cared for and supported and, you know, having things disentangle with a divine intelligence where they don't create so much unnecessary suffering for myself and for those around me and my child and so, and my partner, right? Like there's, and I guess that could come through prayer, right? That can come through prayer. That can come through your, you know, desire and your will to some degree of saying like, I'm available for it. I'm here for it. And right, like, can this be done with grace? Right?
Yeah. That not to like go too deep into like my own psychedelic experiences, but I've sat with ayahuasca twice. And the second time I was so frightened because the first time was so much. And I just like asked her like, hey, can you be gentle? Please, can you be gentle? You know, and she was so gentle. I almost felt bad the next day when everyone was like talking about how horrendous their experiences were. I had also come to a place of like, let's say like unity inside of myself where I don't feel like I'm hiding from myself very much. And so that's quite helpful. But she was just so gentle and loving. And I was like, she can't, but you know what I asked, right? And I wonder if being like, oh, I have a lot of Scorpio energy, so this might blow shit up, is sort of like asking for, not at like, oh, you're asking for it, but like being open to it coming through that way. And I also think we believe that for things to happen fast, they need to be volatile, right? Even thinking of like tapas, like, oh, we need to burn through it as opposed to like just ascending. While you were speaking, Rai, I was thinking about like the tower card and how we think like, oh, only the tower card is going to be this like dissolution that comes to resolution. But like, also, you could just get done or the world or like, right?
Right. Yeah. So it's interesting, right? In having these, you know, evolutions, these emergences, these, you know, releases, so forth, like happen with grace, there are things to give up, right? Like you kind of give up the epic story you get to tell after the fact, right? You give up the juicy plot points. And I don't know if this relates to existential kink, which is like another whole thread, right? But yeah, I think like story involves drama, right? Bringing it back to story. Story always has drama, something that happens, something that our character is faced with, something that's even entertaining for others to hear and listen to. And one of my like, I guess called like what I perceive and judge to be like one of my least optimal or enjoyable character traits is I feel I'm so freaking boring. Like I feel like when people ask me like how my last few months have been or my year or my day, right? I'm like, there's nothing to say, right? Like there's no crazy explosive dramas that I would indulge in sharing. And I feel like character, right? Those we call character, right? Have really exciting stories with really big spikes and really big plot points. And these characters tend to get rewarded in certain spaces where audiences love drama, right? Audience. What is an audience watching? An audience isn't watching you be in perfect stillness and peace and grace. Like that's so boring. Like there's no show on Netflix, right? Or YouTube streamer, Twitch streamer that just sits peacefully, right? So there's still... Oh, maybe there is, or are you getting ideas?
Yes.
Right? So when we talk about like the conditions that the work gets accompanied with, right? If we are still desiring or kinking out on being this character that has this story to tell or gets on, you know, Instagram Live and says, y'all, you'll never believe what just happened, right? And like needs that for their, you know, safety, their existence, or their success even, then yeah, you're essentially, or one is essentially creating these conditions for the work to happen through. So yeah, I think like there's an element of giving up certain indulgences of the drama, even the subtle ones, even the ones that one would think, no, I don't thrive on drama. Like, what are you talking about? Right? Like, there could still be some degree of payoff because like family dinner conversations are awkward enough, right? When you literally don't have anything to talk about, it's like, yeah, next level.
Okay, before you go, Elisa, I think it's hilarious when you say like, I'm super boring, but I wrote 2 books this year. So I'll stop there. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah, boring.
The worst. Yeah.
This conversation keeps bringing me back to the yogic path though, because it's like, I find it's like, even, and this was, I think, part of why we had this episode that was about desire and shadow, because there's like so much, you know, there's a lot of talk about what are your desires? What do you want in like the online coaching and business space? Before that's a whole kettle of fish, but on the yogic path, there's a lot about, you know, letting go of desire or attachment. And I think it can be a weird thing when you're a yogi in the business space and you're being told to be a personal brand and you're like, well, yes, there are kind of authentic desires and dreams that can be dreamed through me that I will offer up to the collective. And I will dance this dance without attachment. Or like in previous iterations, being kind of addicted to storytelling or living life to be able to tell a story, and that, you know, that kind of gestalt of the 20-something writer, et cetera. And then like kind of being okay with letting go of being certain, perceived as certain characters in your life. And I love even what you said about having all the books and not reading them, because feel like, I think it was Yogananda. I'm pretty sure it was Yogananda who was like, you don't need books. Like, don't read books. What are those for? Like, you can kind of like download the information from the ethers, and we can get kind of trapped in all of these aspects of the world. And the last thing that I think is really interesting is that the hero's journey, or these in film, it's like a story that's told by Hollywood and mainstream media over and over again, that does get us kind of, it is like a sort of samsara wheel, as opposed to different kinds of quote stories or viewership experiences, where it's maybe it is a channel of meditation and not much happens, but a moth moving across the screen, or very quickly, like the type of, there was this whole debate going on at UCLA when I was there about, do you outline your script before before or not? And the outliners were like so staunch that it was the only way to write a movie and it had to be done with the hero's journey. And I was in the very feminine school where I was like, I have an image and I have a closing image, and my movies often lacked structural integrity, but that's another story. That's another story that I don't need to tell anymore. But just to say that we put a lot of societally, a lot of preference perhaps on a certain type of story and a certain attachment to the characters. And sometimes it makes people in our lives uncomfortable when we are no longer like playing into a role that maybe they're used to us playing for them and for ourselves. Yeah.
And still to this day, right? Like, I'll be in the presence of some people and immediately reconfigure around their associations of me and expectations of me. And there's a certain like immediacy to that, right? And then I slip out of that, you know, when I leave their presence, right? Or when I step out of it. But of course, like, at the true core of it, it's storyless, right? Story is all happening within this relative realm of importance, right? And I love how you articulated it. Like, that depth of intimacy is scary, and scary for some. I won't tell that story, right? But different, right? To relate to one so lucidly and so truly in the moment is weird and uncommon and unpracticed. And that's a really big part of the relationship work that I'm seeking to bring, right? To dare to know your beloved lucidly beyond your idea of them. Grant them the dignity of being known as they precisely are, not through these, you know, distorted lenses, right? And I have my distorted lenses, right? And they're painful when I know they're distorted, right? And I'm like, I know that's not you, but this filter is telling me it's you. And that sucks because we only have a finite amount of time together on this plane in these bodies. And I want to know who you are. So yeah, it's, you're hitting something really deep and important there in terms of like just that fear, that capacity building to know someone in that moment, right? As they are beyond the story, beyond the comfortable associations. Yeah. And it's so cool and so rich when you can, right? So interesting.
I think also this makes me think of like how the only moment is now. And so a story has like, you know, a beginning, a middle, and an end, and a character arc. But like also then the next cliche that comes to mind is like healing isn't linear. And so if we think, you know, the only moment is now and healing isn't linear, then like all of those stories are, they don't even exist actually, right? Like we actually only know in this moment. And yes, I hear what you're saying of the filter, the lens that we're bringing on it. But I do feel like all we have to do is like release that, like in each moment, release it. And maybe we can know ourselves anyway, right?
Yeah. Or have the joy of not knowing ourselves.
Yeah. And I think though we also have this attachment for things to make sense. Like you were talking about sense making. We have this attachment things to make sense to both our stories and our no stories. And that's just part of like the human framing of existence so that we can go about and eat and, you know, eliminate and like you just exist, right? It's like, I need to understand that story arc of what and how to make breakfast and chewing and swallowing. And like, none of that is that real. If you come down into like, we're actually all just energy and fields, like when you get down to the quantum. So I don't know how it relates to marketing.
Yeah, I mean, how it relates to marketing. Like, I don't have like a pretty bow right here.
I'm like, I got one.
Oh, go. Yeah, go for it.
Or in relationship, because I think this can come up. And Don and I were chatting about this. We had like a beautiful relational exchange before our call. We're like, this must be a blessing that we're about to speak with Brian. We, you know, just talking about in collaboration, business collaborations or partnerships. And when you kind of have long-term business collabs and like deciding like, oh, there are patterns that come up and there are choices we can make together. Like I think sometimes like we're seeing in business beautiful opportunities to be like, oh, like this is my core pattern. And now I'm getting an opportunity to like be witnessed in my core pattern and make a different choice. And so deep.
Well said. Yes.
Well, we're lucky we were crying. I was crying a little bit before we hopped on. We're like, yes, of course, we're meeting with Ryan.
I was crying today, too.
Shoot. Good press.
Oh, gosh. What was I crying about today? Like, I don't have like very frequent crying episode. It's so good when it happens. And I'm like, yes, tears. I think the YouTube algorithm served me up like Lucas Graham's 7 years live somewhere. And like, for whatever reason, that song just still always makes me cry. I'm like, it feels so good to cry. Anyway.
We're like, looks like your son for a second in a big way. Not that he is crying and you're all bearded, but I've just seen like some photos of your son. And I was just like, oh, he just became a kid in front of my eyes. Right. What kind of work are you doing right now? And what kind of work feels like most alive? And what excites you the most? Like if people wanted to work with you, what is your favorite way of working with people right now?
Yeah. So terrible strategic answer, right? And my whole career has been terrible strategic answers. That's my story, right? I'll let it go and I'm ready to let go of that story. Yeah. I still play in most of these realms that we spoke about, right? Like I will write copy when I feel like, yes, this could be interesting. I could slip back into that. I will coach it. I will mentor it because I enjoy that aspect. And for whatever reason, that aspect has kept enjoying me playing within it. Money stuff, shadow money, ceremony. I think those are really good places for people digging deep into that world. And for those who resonate with that work and want to go deeper into unwinding those shadow patterns, releasing them back into that wholeness, that is a process I facilitate as well. And same in the relationship world. So that's through the relationship recode, which also brings up some of those relational shadows. And same deal there, right? If one chooses to or decides to go deeper in unwinding those, facilitation is also available. So yeah, I think that's the buffet of offerings.
Okay. And then like, you know, what's your customer journey for people who want to get on one of those offerings? Where can we find you and how can they do it?
So I have a Kajabi account, a GoHowLevel account, a WordPress account, 18 domains. Yeah, I'd say like the best starting point to see if one vibes and feels energized and activated by the work. The books, certainly on Amazon, Shadow Money for that line of work, the Relationship Recode on the Hendrix Black side. Those would be the best entry points and see if what I am pointing to or bringing on the page awakens something or activates something worth continuing to go deeper on. From there, the books have funnels because look at that, I still know how to market. So there would be opportunities to go deeper from there. Copywriting, mentorship, DFY, that is all done through personal messaging. Mostly get an introduction if you can. If not, find me on Facebook and just say, what's up? You heard me here and you'd like to chat about something. So those are the things.
Hey, thank you so much. Thanks so much for being here. Well, see, it's been a highlight of my career as a copywriter. I feel like the story is I can be done now because Ryan and I are working on a project right now where I'm his copy chief. I don't have to do much. I'm like, whoa. Well, I should retire because it doesn't get any better than this. So if you want Rye to write for you, you can send me a message and I can contact him, find out if he's interested, be your agent, and then connect you in the appropriate channels. And thank you so much. It has, can't wait for that project to come out. And yeah, thanks so much for this conversation. So rich, so many places to sort of like dive in deeper. And there is something about this channeling of information that I am seeking right now. So I don't know. I'm going to just like, you know, maybe I'll listen to this episode. I never listen to our podcast because it makes me want to vomit. But maybe I'll listen to this episode and see if there can be that place where the channeling can come from.
I know the feeling of not wanting to hear one's voice. And I'll offer like one final practical tip, right? To use this like within a business context that took me a while to realize that I had been doing this. And I'm all for, obviously, voice of customer data, voice of prospect, interviews, all that fun stuff. I'm not going to lie. There were some projects where I did that retroactively to confirm information that I was already receiving. And one way to really kind of tap into that really simply is if you know, right, like your product is poised or the product you're helping market is poised to attract 10 or 15 or 100 or 500 customers, right? That is an information field, the information field of the 500 people that were in FES, right? And relating with that field, you will get that information. And once again, stress test it, right? Like information from that field versus this one, realize and notice that there's differences there, right? And test the authenticity of it. So yeah, so much of my copy just comes from relating to those soon to be customers who isn't just one person, right? But a multitude of people, right? And that's where different perspectives and different motivators come onto the page and different questions to answer and different objections and concerns to make sure are well addressed with the wording or the copy that would soothe their systems and create safety. So that information is there. And yeah, I'd say use it in balance with the more scientific methods. But yes, I'll conclude with that.
Love it. You won't tell jokes. Okay, amazing. Thanks so much for being here. I have nothing else to ask that won't open another hour and a half conversation. So yeah, thank you so much for being here. You guys can find Rye most easily in the ethers. So open to the field that is Rye, and maybe he'll find you on Facebook yourself. Okay.
That's good. Thanks so much for holding the space and just creating a beautiful conversation. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Softpreneur Podcast. If it resonated with your ethos and your soul, we would be so grateful to you if you leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast.
This helps us grow so much, and it also helps more visionary business owners find the show so they can make their dream life their real life. So many blessings and love.